The Johnson Wax Program. The makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, and Johnson's Car New present the brilliant conductor-composer of melody, Meredith Wilson, and MGM's noted young commentator, star, and teller of amazing tales, John Nesbitt. Ladies and gentlemen, this program, in the words of John Nesbitt and the music of Meredith Wilson, with songs by Connie Haynes and Bob Carroll, is sent to you by S.C. Johnson & Sons, makers of Johnson's wax finishes for home and industry. Now, here are Meredith Wilson and John Nesbitt. Meredith and John have been laboring amiably together for the past few days preparing tonight's program. Meredith banging on his piano while John read over his dramatic story. Mail coming in from Fibber McGee and Molly, and all the usual excitement that precedes our show. What has this violent activity resulted in, John?
Why, Meredith and I got ourselves into international politics this week, Harlow. And I worked out a message which we're sending out tonight to the meanest man in the world.
And your story will naturally curl my hair.
Naturally, Harlow, you'll be practically frazzled.
And what would you say about the music, Meredith?
Well, I'd say as little as possible, Harlow, John being so garrulous tonight. Except that for this first number, I've gone back to my favorite trick of playing a piece of brass band music with a concert orchestra. It's the famous Sousa March called Hands Across the Sea, which has become one of the symbols of the United Nations.
Very pleasant melody has been the cue all summer long for the Department of Lost Music, which is the idea Meredith has made famous through this program, finding melodies and songs that might have been lost forever and bringing them before the nation. Tonight's song, however, could not possibly be called lost, for it was inspired by the way the Russians have been fighting for a cause they will not lose, and by a piece of Russian-composed music that is familiar to music lovers the world over. So this evening we present not a lost song, but one that you have never heard before. It is called And Still the Volga Flows. The music is adapted from Rachmaninoff's Second Concerto. The words were written by Meredith Wilson, and they will be sung by Bob Carroll.
Thank you. Volga flows through silent valleys that will learn to sing again. When every field and plain is bearing golden grain, and every voice will rejoice in spring again. And still she rolls along, the mighty heartbeat of defiant winter snow. Her star will rise again in peaceful skies again, and never fall while the Volga
receives its first presentation to the country, and still the Volga flows. For a moment here, we make way for Harlow Wilcox and his message from the Johnson Wax Field.
Do you remember that old fable about the ant and the grasshopper? How the ant looked ahead and got ready for the winter while the grasshopper just hopped his time away? Well, that little old ant was practicing conservation and preparedness, like all you car owners who are taking good care of your automobiles to make them last through the duration. And while you're at that important job, don't overlook the finish of your car. It's so easy to keep it satin smooth and sparkling with Johnson's Car New, the labor-saving polish that both cleans and polishes with one application. If you don't keep the paint job clean and polished, road scum and smashed bugs will damage it, even if it sits in your garage most of the time. And Car New is so easy to use, you'll gladly do the job yourself. Then if you want added protection for the finish, you can apply a coat of Johnson's Auto Wax or the regular Johnson's Wax. But make a mental note now to buy a package of Johnson's Car New, spelled C-A-R-N-U. During these summer evenings of informal entertainment, John Nesbitt has built his passing parade stories from many different materials. News dispatches, history books, songs and poems, and sometimes private documents. Tonight's offering is perhaps the most unusual of all, for it takes the form of a letter, addressed to a man who never reads the mail from America, but to whom nonetheless John Nesbitt has just written this letter, which we deliver with our compliments over the radio tonight. John Nesbitt.
The USA, September 22nd, 1942. Addressed to Adolf Hitler and Company, with branch offices at Tokyo and Rome, in account with the people of the United Nations. At the city of Munich on September 29, 1938, we entered into a contract with you in which we paid over on the spot certain quantities of national honor and our entire world supply of human security. We received in return your note backed by a commodity we desired, which was called peace in our time. As you did not make delivery of this commodity as promised by you, we have long since suspended any further payments to you of our honor and self-respect. Nonetheless, our Board of Trustees has agreed to extend your credit with us to an unlimited extent, and it is our pleasure to announce that we expect to produce your merchandise in quantities far beyond your expectations. Concentrating exclusively on the orders that have come from you and your branch offices at Tokyo and Rome, we have renovated our plant, redesigned our machinery, employed 20 million additional men and women in our factories, and we have incidentally redesigned our daily lives. Your often expressed statement that our merchandise would arrive too late to be of any use has caused us deep concern, But as you are our most favored customer today, we have taken steps not to disappoint you by late delivery of the following, which, roughly speaking, we now list. Some 165,000 airplanes, a mere 120,000 tanks, a little matter of 1,800 merchant ships, 69 nice new aircraft carriers, in addition, and 13 million of our justly famous Garand rifles. We're quite proud of these, and we know you'll soon have an opportunity to see them in action. Add to this a billion or two articles of equipment for an Army, Navy, and Air Corps, and an unpublished number of Norden bomb sites through which so many of our boys would like to get their first views of beautiful Berlin and Tokyo. All of this merchandise we've earmarked especially for Adolf Hitler Company in branches and is shortly to be delivered. And by the way, the charges are all prepaid. We may be unable to notify you of the exact time of delivery due to uncertain conditions which you'll understand. But as far as possible, we will use Airplane Express, which applies particularly to the delivery of the two-ton bomb. We are financing your order among our own shareholders. Our company, as you know, is owned by its employees, numbering some 1 billion people in the United Nations. As the last time we did business with your firm, between the years 1914 and 1918, the cost was $400 billion, We are prepared at present to double or even treble that amount. In terms of the human pleasures which this sum of money would have bought, had we not been forced to spend it in dealing with you, our statisticians have prepared an interesting paper which we append to this bill. For the amount of money we are now spending, and in the course of time would so have spent, all of the people working on your order, every man and woman in America, England, Australia, France, Russia, China, Ireland, Belgium, every country in South America, and yes, even your Germany, Japan, and Italy, could have had each and every one of the following things. Not just one of them, but all. Every single adult in all of these countries could have had a new automobile. Every man, woman, and child could have had medical service paid for to the end of his life. Every man, woman, and child could have had a high school and college education with all expenses paid. Every single family and every one of the nations mentioned could have had a brand new $4,000 home on 4 acres of land. Every single town of 25,000 population in every one of these nations could have had a $10 million community center or university and a $5 million library and a $5 million hospital. And we would still have endless billions of dollars remaining unspent. We could pay the salaries for life of all the teachers and doctors and nurses and scientists and artists in the world. Every working person could have 3 months paid vacation each year for the next 100 years. And every family in America, England, France, Russia, China, Germany, Japan, and all the rest could have paid in full its grocery bill, its light, gas, telephone, and laundry bills for the rest of its full life. Every man and woman in the United Nations would have had all of these things with the total amount of money which will be spent in meeting your order. But since your requirements have taken away any chance of doing this, we gladly spend them for the merchandise intended for Adolf Hitler and Company and branches. We do this for a reason which would not be very clear to you, but which we refer to under the simple heading of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Yet we consider this expense in terms of dollars and cents, of material things, a very small one, compared to the cost in terms of a special group, soon to number 10 million, which is made up of young uniformed men who intend to deliver all the merchandise we're preparing for you. They are our most important workers. They intend to deliver your merchandise even at the cost of their lives. We recognize that you do not place the value of a man's life very high, but we have quite a different system of moral bookkeeping here. Our men are growing quite expert in the use of the merchandise and are prepared to demonstrate all of it to your representatives whenever and wherever they meet them. And you need not be impatient over their arrival. They are on their way. In concluding this report, Herr Hitler, we beg to remind you that our credit department has certain suspicions of your honor and your credit, and so has requested that to collect the payment for this exceedingly large order, indeed the largest order the world has ever known, we come to you in person to collect. We promise to do this. We will be happy to write payment in full across your bill in exchange for these things. All of your concentration camps, all of your torture chambers, all your tribunals where men are condemned to death without trial by a jury of their peers, all of your schoolrooms where you teach children that to kill is better than to understand, all of the colleges where you teach students that one race is born noble and great and another race is born to evil and to slavery, all of the lecture halls where you preach that woman is an animal fit only to cook and bear children, everywhere where you preach that the man with the whip is the only God. If this payment seems a little unusual to your company, it is due to the fact that many of our shareholders lived in Greece, where the streets are littered with the bodies of dead children. In a place called Poland, where 1,000 people are starved to death each day. At a place called Crete, at a city called Rotterdam. Many of our shareholders are therefore inactive because they are dead. But their voice has requested that one day you be placed where you can see them all, face to face, and look into their empty eyes. You are expected to comply with their request as part payment, and their wish will be fulfilled. But oddly enough, aside from this, the 1 billion shareholders in our company of the United Nations do not demand that we exact impossible terms for the services rendered. They demand as payment from you not a new world, but a chance to build a new world, meeting its problems as men among men and not as men among beasts. As payment in full, we demand only the key to the prison into which you have locked the heart and soul of man. Sincerely yours, the shareholders of the United Nations.
A letter to Hitler, signed, sealed, and delivered, we turn back to the good things of our own land with another of the expertly assembled medleys of American popular songs, which, because so many of them speak of the sentimental heart of our people, Meredith Wilson calls America Sings.
And if I may put a footnote at the bottom of that, Harlow, I want to say that this is the last time that our baritone, Bob Carroll, will sing his share of the lyrics. He goes off to join the Air Corps for the duration tonight. And so to Private Carroll, we dedicate our last medley of America Sings.
Love me, for I'm pretty sure you don't. but tell me that you like me, and there's nothing that I won't be glad to do. Do honestly and true, I go along. For you, I do a wrong. For you, because I'm awfully strong for you.
telegram he wants to read, and we'll have it in a moment. But now, ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. A few moments ago, John Nesbitt gave you some interesting facts and figures. I have some additional information that will prove quite startling. Just digest these facts and figures. In 2 years of war, 460,000 Yugoslavs have been murdered in cold blood. In Greece, more than 1,000 a day die from starvation. Food in Belgium was so scarce last year that rats were butchered and sold for 20 francs. 82,000 Poles have been executed in concentration camps. Since the war began, 2,500,000 laborers from outside the Reich have been forced to slave in German factories or fields. In Holland, the ashes of patriotic Dutchmen who die or are executed in concentration camps are on sale to their families for 25 guilders. From Serbia, the Nazis gathered 100,000 children and forced them to march all the way to Germany. Those children who survived were placed in labor camps and taught that they belonged to a lower race which must serve Germany. Pretty gruesome, isn't it? Yet, that's the nature of our enemy. President Roosevelt called them powerful and resourceful gangsters banded together to make war upon the whole human race.
And to return again to the brighter side, I have before me a telegram from one of our most faithful listeners this summer, a gentleman named Fibber McGee. It reads, Meredith Wilson and John Nesbitt program, Johnson Wax Company, NBC, Hollywood, California. Attention, Mr. John B. Nesbitt, Esquire. Hello, Curly. Molly and me sure got a kick out of the stuff Meredith and you did this summer. A real job, kid. Only I kept worrying because you weren't getting laughs. Until Molly says, do you get laughs out of the New York Philharmonic Symphony, McGee? And I says, why not? And she says, you and Meredith are strictly a class act. But why no laughs, I says. And she says, it's too hot to go into the point with an Irishman. Anyway, Molly and me and all the gang will be back next week. And she loved hearing Meredith's beautiful music this summer, and I did too. But why no laughs, Curly? Yours, Fibber McGee. Incidentally, this telegram came collect. And this is the last of our summer series for the Johnson Wax people, and to them we extend our thanks. But we have time for a bow to all the members of our company, including Miss Connie Haynes, from whom I'm sure you'll hear again, Private Bob Carroll, and Meredith's very competent musical arranger, Mr. Carmen Dragon. So for Meredith Wilson, Connie Haynes, Bob Carroll, and Harlow, I bid you a royal welcome next week to Fibber McGee, and for myself, good evening.
Remember, next week, Fibber McGee and Molly. This is Harlow Wilcox bidding you all good night. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company. Chicago, WMAQ at 9.